From Connecticut Public Radio, this is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. This was supposed to be the last day of our series of interviews with Connecticut gubernatorial candidates, but we changed plans on Saturday after learning about the mass shooting inside a Pittsburgh synagogue. Today, Where We Live, our phone lines are open for you to call and react to this latest violent act in our country. Saturday's mass shooting was fueled by anti-Semitism, with the shooter telling police he wanted, quote, all Jews to die. He killed 11 people and injured several more. Today he'll be in court to face 29 federal charges, including committing a hate crime. What was your reaction when you heard about what happened? Did you talk about it at your place of worship on Sunday? How are you talking about this act of hate with your friends, your family, your children? You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, at Where We Live. Is what happened in Pittsburgh an isolated incident, or is it part of a larger trend of intolerance that's growing in this country? I want to welcome my first guest to the show. Steve Ginsburg is director of the Anti-Defamation League in the Connecticut region. Steve, welcome to Where We Live.
Hi. Thank you.
Understand, over the weekend, this was the statement from the ADL CEO, Jonathan Greenblatt, who said that this is the deadliest attack on the Jewish community in the history of the United States. He goes on to say, unfortunately, this violence occurs at a time when ADL has reported a historic increase in both anti-Semitic incidents and anti-Semitic online harassment. As a representative of ADL in the Connecticut region, what was your response when you heard about what happened in Pittsburgh on Saturday?
Well, similar to Jonathan, our CEO, and all of us who work at ADL, I was shocked and horrified, but not entirely surprised, because we've been tracking incidents for anti-Semitic incidents for close to 40 years, and we all know that there's been a meaningful spike over the past few years, and especially between 2016 and 17, and going into this year, we've sort of kept at that same level of reports of these types of incidents to our office. And so it's a national trend that we've been seeing that has reflected also here in Connecticut.
When you talk about the trends being reflected here in Connecticut, can you walk us through some of these incidents?
Sure. So many of the incidents, sadly, we see are happening in schools. About half the incidents that get reported are some form of anti-Semitic bullying or taunting or graffiti related to school. And in those cases, we handle them along with school leaders and community leaders by educating. Another troubling concern is the other kind of incidents we're seeing, which are in communities, in parks, on buildings, and actual threats that we've seen, some of which we have to keep confidential, but all of which we record as anti-Semitic incidents. And those, the ones occurring from, you know, adults in our community, those are the ones we are less forgiving of. We still take an educational approach, but we know that that's when law enforcement needs to get involved.
Steve, why does ADL believe these anti-Semitic incidents, this online harassment, why has it been increasing?
Well, I don't think there's one clear reason, but we are seeing over the past few years a meaningful and troubling change in the rhetoric in our politics. It is in some ways fueled by social media, in other ways by leaders who are either saying the wrong things or failing to say the right things.
Some would point to the words that President Trump has used as well. Most recently in this past week, he was speaking to a rally, I believe, in Texas, where he proudly declares that he's a nationalist. We'll play that here.
You know, they have a word. It sort of became old-fashioned. It's called a nationalist. And I say, really, we're not supposed to use that word. You know what I am? I'm a nationalist, okay? I'm a nationalist.
When those words are spoken, Steve, is that a dog whistle of sorts?
To us, it is. And I think that to the average American who is following the rise in hate or extremism, that the word nationalist, you know, the word usually coming before that is white nationalist, and that is a form of white supremacy that we track and condemn here at ADL, and so many of us in our community, that is not a word that we are comfortable with. I think the president has been clear that globalism is something he sees as an evil, and globalism is something that that the Jewish community has been accused of. George Soros often being called a globalist, and we see globalists as a dog whistle of sorts to promote anti-Semitic ideology. And so nationalist, as the counter to that, you know, we all love our country. We all love the United States and want it to be strong and proud. But that doesn't mean we need to call ourselves nationalists. And frankly, I worked years ago in the former Yugoslavia and Bosnia, where nationalism led to years of conflict and violent conflict. And just when I hear that word, I personally react very negatively to it.
Steve Ginsburg is director of the Anti-Defamation League in the Connecticut region. This is where we live. As we take this hour to reflect on what happened in Pittsburgh and what's been happening over the last few years, where there is an increase in hate crimes, an increase in hateful rhetoric, you can join our conversation, 860-275-7266. You know, Steve, you were talking about the Jewish community, and this shooter in Pittsburgh made a point to target the Tree of Life Synagogue in the Squirrel Hill neighborhood because of their affiliation with a Jewish nonprofit known as Hias. Before Saturday, many of us had not heard of this organization. What can you tell us about them?
Yeah, so Hias has been around helping refugees resettle for, I think, around 130-some years. Obviously, for many of those years, they were focused on resettling Jewish refugees around the world. And in more recent decades, have shifted to a broader focus and taking that their skills and resources to help non-Jewish people resettle in new, safer places. We at ADL work very closely with Hias. In fact, our CEO, Jonathan Greenblatt, and the head of Hias took a mission to the United States southern border and to Mexico to see what was going on our southern border just about a month or two ago. And the work that they do is very important. And the thing I want to mention with respect to Mr. Bauer's social media posts about Hias is it is not uncommon for white supremacists to take a very strong anti-immigrant stance and to then take the next step, if they're anti-Semitic, and blame Jews for the immigration, quote-unquote, crisis.
You mentioned Mr. Bowers. That would be the shooter, Robert Bowers, who's been charged with 29 federal counts, also a hate crime as well. And when we talk about a response here in Connecticut, Steve, what have you been hearing from Jewish members of our communities about what they should do, whether they feel unsafe now going to their local synagogue?
Well, you know, yesterday was a very important response day for our community, and frankly, the beautiful part about it was the outpouring of support from non-Jewish communities from across Connecticut. There were vigils at temples and Jewish community centers across our state, and the turnout was just really heartwarming. People are reasonably afraid. They were scared to take their kids to religious school on Sunday, but when they see the support from law enforcement and from the rest of the community, they know that they need to keep moving forward with their lives, and we can't just back off celebrating our religion and sort of celebrating America. So they're looking for guidance on how to keep their synagogue safe, their Jewish institution safe. But they need to keep going. And seeing them full yesterday was really heartening.
We mentioned President Trump. He was asked whether America's gun culture is responsible for what happened in Pittsburgh. He pushed that aside, instead emphasizing that if this Tree of Life synagogue had stronger security, there would have been a different outcome. What is your response to what he said? Because you mentioned that, you know, we don't want to be locking our doors every single day, but we live in this reality now where people don't know when they'll become a target.
So my reaction to that is that we need to find a good balance. We need to make sure that our houses of worship, synagogues, mosques, churches are welcoming places for the stranger, and that people can freely come and be accepted. Yet we also need to make sure that all of these houses of worship, synagogues, and others have the right security procedures in place. We've seen, not just at synagogues, but over the past couple of years, churches, mosques, the Sikh temple in Oak Creek, Wisconsin years ago, houses of worship are targets, and we need to make sure that they are working with local law enforcement and private security to come up with whatever is the reasonable plan for their particular community. That might involve, in certain situations, a police presence. It might involve private security. It might involve, at other times, just a security a guard at the door. We're going to need to take a real close look. But I do not believe that we need to arm people or turn synagogues into armed camps. That is not the ADL's position on this.
I wanted to go back to something you said, Steve, earlier about when we're seeing incidents of anti-Semitism in local schools, whether it be graffiti or a passing comment. Now that this has happened in Pittsburgh, you know, what is your advice to both educators and parents about the words children should use, the way we should communicate with each other?
Well, at ADL, we've been taught telling people that words matter for a very long time. We run hundreds of programs here in Connecticut every year under our A World of Difference Institutes for educators and students. And we talk to those students about bias. That is the underlying sense of all of our programs. And then we teach them about empathy and kindness and how they can be someone who stands up for someone else rather than a bystander, and someone who was the bully can turn into an ally for someone else. We think that it's a tough time to be a kid going through these situations in our country, and we need to, right now, we need to just comfort them and let them express how they're feeling, and then provide them with an age-appropriate level of history and perspective and the right steps to take. The words that kids use in social media, the words that they use with their friends in the hallway at school, they need to feel free to express themselves, but they also need to understand how their words can land with someone else. So,
well, I want to thank Steve Ginsburg again, director of the Anti-Defamation League for the Connecticut region, for joining us here on Where We Live. Steve, thank you. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. Again, we're taking today's show to reflect on what happened in Pittsburgh and to find out what conversations you're having within your communities. Coming up, we're going to hear from two faith leaders, and we'll take your calls as well. Here's the number, 860-275-7266. As always, find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel from Connecticut Public Radio. Churches, synagogues, mosques, and temples, they're all houses of worship that can serve as a refuge from everyday troubles, a place to pray and share community. But even this feeling of safety inside these sanctuaries has been shattered time and time again. You can go back to 1963 when four little black girls died at Third Baptist Church in Birmingham when it was bombed. And in recent years, worshipers have died inside a Sikh temple in Wisconsin, to Baptist churches in Charleston, South Carolina, and Sunderland Springs, Texas, to now members killed inside their Pittsburgh synagogue. Is tightening security the only solution? We want to hear from you this hour. 860-275-7266. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. I want to welcome into our conversation now two faith leaders. First, Rabbi Deborah Cantor. She's a rabbi at B'nai Tikva Shalom on the Bloomfield, West Hartford, Connecticut line, also founder of the Neshama Center for Lifelong Learning. Rabbi Cantor, welcome to our show.
Thanks so much.
Also with us is Dr. Reza Mansour. During the day, he's a cardiologist, but he's also founding president of the Muslim Coalition of Connecticut and president of the Islamic Association of Greater Hartford in Berlin, Connecticut. Dr. Mansour, welcome to, back to our show.
Thank you, Lucy. Thank you for having me.
I want to start with you, Rabbi Cantor, about when you heard the news on Saturday, which is a day of prayer in your faith.
Right. So we were in services when this massacre was happening. We had no idea. And it wasn't until we were cleaning up from our lunch that we share after services every Saturday morning. I was in the social hall and somebody ran in from the kitchen and said, Rabbi, I know this is not Shabbat appropriate because we usually try to disconnect from social media and from our phones, but I just got this alert on my phone and told me, and I had a visceral reaction. I literally began to shake, and we were so shaken up, and we couldn't leave the synagogue. We kind of huddled together and tried to piece together with the news reports what was going on and what had happened. And I think, as Steve Ginsburg just said, it was horrible and it was terrifying, but it wasn't surprising. It capped off a week of terrible news of, you know, hate crime in Kentucky, where another white nationalist terrorist had tried to enter a black church and denied entry, had just gone to a grocery store and murdered two African Americans shopping for food. A week in which, I don't know, 12 pipe bombs were sent to people who had criticized the president. I mean, this is the kind of world we're living in. And daily there is vitriol and hate being spewed at political rallies. And, you know, the president is, you know, at the top of the chain here of spewing this kind of language. Language, words have power. In Hebrew, there's only one word for both those things, davar, word and thing. A word leads to action. And in this case, there's an inevitability when you say over and over again when you demonize people every day, when you say over and over again that immigrants, that refugees, that strangers, are murderers and rapists, that they're coming to destroy us, that they're at our borders, that they're within our cities, that they're here, that you inflame people. And this is what happens.
We heard through media reports, something that even Steve Ginsburg alluded to, is that this shooter in Pittsburgh, the reason he chose this particular synagogue in this community in Pittsburgh, which is a large Jewish community, that they were affiliated, they were doing work, mm-hmm. or they were representing of having a partnership with this organization. Hayes, this is something that your synagogue as well has a partnership with, to welcome
right.
The stranger, the refugee. Did it make you anxious?
Oh my, yes. That was another chilling aspect of this. The man who did this massacre looked on. He's been following Hayes because he sees a connection between helping refugees and Jews, and he's been following Hayes. And he looked on their website, knowing that there was this national refugee Shabbat. Mm-hmm. And there was a list of congregations participating in that. And he found this Tree of Life Synagogue. That's, you know, that's the congregation that had participated in this in Pittsburgh. Well, we are on that list also because the week before we had also participated in National Refugee Shabbat. We're very active with Hias. On the front of our lawn, actually on the most prominent corner of our property, right on the corner where there's a three-way stop sign where people can see it, there's a big banner and it says, "Our people were refugees too." And everybody sees that banner. We get calls from time to time from people who stop at that corner, Jews, everybody, and they say, "Thank you for putting that banner up." We put it up in the wake of the Muslim ban early in the winter of 2016. And we're proud to have that banner up. Our board voted unanimously to put up that banner. And I thought to myself, oh my God, we're targets. We're on that list. We have that banner. We ordered that banner from Hias. And now we're out there. And we're not taking down that banner. We're just not taking it down.
You're hearing Rabbi Deborah Cantor again. She's rabbi at B'nai Tikva Shalom on the Bloomfield, West Hartford, Connecticut line. Also in studio with us is Dr. Reza Mansour. Where were you when you heard about what happened in Pittsburgh and among your community, your faith community? How are you talking about this?
I was actually taking a break from my community to go visit my son in D.C., who's studying in D.C., and we had the conversation with our family instead of the whole community. But I understand that at the same time, my community was consulting me on letters that they wanted to put up to stand up in solidarity. But before I go any further, I want to express my profound, heartfelt condolence to not only the victims and the families, but to the whole Jewish community. Hearing my sister, Deborah Cantor, say those words of gives me chills. Why should a faith community have to go through this kind of fear just to go worship God? I mean, this is a fundamental right that we have in America. It really hurts our feelings to know, and I want Deborah to know that as a Muslim community, we stand hand in hand with you, and we will do whatever is needed. I just last night convened the Interfaith Task Force, which is Jews, Muslims, and Christians working together, and this was started after the rhetoric of 2016. This election was horrendous. As Deborah said, words have meaning. I mean, some of the things that the president have said have directly resulted in this kind of hate, and we have to call it out. There's a vacuum of moral leadership from the president, and the faith communities need to take the task on, and we have to make this the sentinel event that makes us work together stronger to say never again. Never again will we allow any faith community to be targeted.
You know, I referenced past mass shootings in other places of worship, and you know, the one that happened almost a year, in a couple of weeks, will be the one in Sunderland Springs, Texas. Yeah. Do you feel like we're at this point, Dr. Mansour, and I'd be curious also for your thoughts, Rabbi Cantor, that these events happen and we get upset and there is a feeling of community, and then we have to move on with our everyday. And then something else happens, and it's the same, it's repeated again and again and again.
It seems that way.
What can change?
You know, it seems that way. I think political leadership needs to take a moral and a stronger stand. There's equivocation by politicians. One day they say something, the next day they say, you know what, it's okay. You know, the president did it. He very strongly condemned the pipe bombings, and then the next day, he was, you know, equivocating. You can't be that equivocating leader. I think the faith communities have to stand together and say, no, we won't allow this. We need to work together. And in the greater Hartford area, frankly, we've been doing this for many, many years. Deborah has partnered with me, with my wife, in standing up together, standing up at vigils, standing up, working in panels like this, talking about the need to work together. I mean, the differences are minute compared to the things we have in common. As faith communities, we have so much more in common and so much more that we have to work on, to work on the issues of the poor, the immigration issue. And this is why the Jewish community was picked on. But this is, you know, if you look at the way the president talks of this rhetoric and lies about it, about the Mexicans having Middle Easterners, he's alluding to Muslims coming into this country. And that's deeply hurtful to Muslims. You know, he has also spoken about it at his rallies, the Muslim ban, Islam hates us. This is not true. I feel a cringe when I think about why I came to America as a, you know, I came as a as an immigrant, but my medical school in Sri Lanka was blown up as part of a civil war that was started by a leader very similar to President Trump, who brought up this whole Buddhist nationalism, but called it nationalism, but it was clearly Buddhist nationalism, and therefore there was a civil war that lasted for 25 years, 100,000 people died, and there were so many consequences of this, including my medical school being blown up. And I'm so grateful to this nation for having allowed me to continue my education, to practice as a physician, and now I work in the greater Hartford area, giving back as much as I can to the community. Muslims are part of the fabric, as are the Jewish as is the Jewish community, part of the fabric of this beautiful nation, and we need to really celebrate our diversity, and that's what's lacking.
I think there's two points here. One is that we have very short memories. You know, there's a 24-hour news cycle, and whether we're talking about violence in a church or a synagogue or a mosque, or whether we're talking about in a movie theater, you know, one of the things that happens is we get all excited about something, and then the news cycle moves on, and we forget all about it. That's just one aspect of it. Another aspect is that this part of this is gun violence, right? One part of this is the hateful rhetoric that stirs this all up. But another part is the gun violence that plagues our country. And if I hear another politician offer, you know, thoughts and prayers, I don't know. I find it nauseating when they offer thoughts and prayers because refuse to do anything substantive to address any kind of sensible legislation, anything to offer more safety, sensible, you know, safety measures that could be taken even in the manufacture of guns. There's no, you know, everything is, you know, the obeisance to the NRA, and no thought of what would keep our children safer, what would keep our nation safer. So this worship of guns in our country, which is a kind of sickness, the refusal of our government to even allow the CDC to study guns as a cause of death in our country. So that's one thing, is that in embedded in all this is gun violence. The other thing is that we look at a crisis like this, and everybody beautifully came together yesterday in this community, all over the state of Connecticut, all over the nation. Yesterday, I was not at the vigil in West Hartford, where so many people came together, because I was at another event in Farmington. I spoke at an event, How in God's Name Do We Talk to Each Other, which we had actually scheduled 6 months ago, not knowing, of course, what would, you know, that this would be happening in the wake of the horrible events of Saturday. I came in before the event started. So many people hugged me, people I've been working with for years, people I didn't know. And you know, just the feeling, just walking into the room, and there were well over 100 people there, all of us wanting to figure out how do we build relationships. Because the most important thing, I think, is not only how we gather together after these terrible things happen, but how do we build relationships over time? How do we work together over time? How do we, as the Quran puts it, come to know one another in our diversity? You know, Reza and I have known each other for years, and his wife and I, Ida and I, worked together. We taught with a Christian colleague. We taught religion together in a school for middle school boys from underserved community, from underserved families in Hartford. We taught religion together for 6 years. you know, we have long-standing, deep relationships. That's how we build something. We come to know one another and appreciate one another and work together. And then when these things happen, we're there for one another.
This is Where We Live. Rabbi Deborah Cantor is here from B'nai Tikva Shalom on the Bloomfield West Hartford line. Also, Dr. Reza Mansour, president of the Islamic Association of Greater Hartford. We want to hear from you, too. The number 860-275-7266. I'm going to take some calls now. Sarah's calling from Washington, D.C. Sarah's actually a Connecticut resident, and we wanted to talk with you about some of the security measures your particular synagogue have taken, Sarah.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So we, last year, our synagogue started raising money to increase security and improving our security systems. But one of the things that we always do is whenever there's a large event at the synagogue, like a bar mitzvah or the High Holy Days or any sort of major event at the synagogue, they always hire licensed armed security guards. And we got an email from the president of our synagogue yesterday saying that the Stamford Police Department is going to provide additional patrols of our synagogue as well as the other ones in the JCC. I previously lived in Europe, in England, and the synagogue I went to there was always, every Shabbat, there was an armed guard outside the synagogue. And it's sad that we are now at the place in the United States where we're getting to that too.
Well, I wanted to ask you, Sarah, with our earlier conversation with the Steve Ginsburg with the ADL in Connecticut, also reflecting on what President Trump said about if the synagogue in Pittsburgh had greater security or protection, the situation may have been different. As a member of a Jewish synagogue, beyond security at high holidays, is this something that you think is necessary every week? Or how do you and your membership feel safe again going to your local synagogue?
I think the most important, well, first of all, what President Trump did was so typical, was blame the victims. And we've seen this before, blame the Jews for their own martyrdom. So that was really disturbing. You don't want your synagogue to be a place where people feel like they can't come and have it be, you know, open to the stranger. I think the most important thing that we can do to feel safe is have our all of our politicians and all of our, quote, nice neighbors who were willing to turn a blind eye to this hate rhetoric that has been going on for several years now. I used to write for Connecticut News Junkie, and I wrote several columns about going back to December 2015. The first one I wrote was talking about how now is the time, it was the time for moral courage. Politicians can't be bystanders to hate speech. And I wrote several columns after that. And at one point, I even called J.R. Romano, the head of the Connecticut GOP, and was begging him to say something. And he would not. And that is the most disturbing thing to me, is when I see my, you know, nice neighbors who are willing to turn a blind eye to all the rhetoric that is happening, because they have some other objective, like getting a tax cut, or we cannot do that. Mm-hmm. 12 years ago, I was one of the docents when the Anne Frank, A History for Our Time exhibit came to Greenwich High School. And one of the most important things that we tried to get through to the kids who came through was that Hitler didn't come into power and create Auschwitz right away. It was gradual and insidious. And he started off targeting the most, the minority groups. And when that didn't meet protest, it became easier to move on to the next step. And that's why we, you know, Jewish communities have been so, at some of the forefront of protesting against the Muslim ban, because we know the consequences of this.
Well, Sarah, thank you for calling in today here on Where We Live. The number 860-275-7266. Cassandra's calling from Simsbury. Cassandra, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to say that our son lives a block from Tree of Life Synagogue, and he called on Saturday morning frantic because he was looking out the window with police and sirens and SWAT teams. And I just wanted to respond to your comments about the community. Squirrel Hill, if you've never been there, is one of the most amazing communities, and he chose to live in Squirrel Hill while at Carnegie Mellon. It's a place where Christians and Jews and Muslims live together and love together, and the prayer vigil on Saturday night was at 6th Presbyterian, and he called again, and he said, Mom, there are thousands of people in the street below my apartment with candles. And so I just wanted to say how it's really shaken him, and he's a Christian, and it's shaken us, and we're Christians, but we are all children of God. And this model that Squirrel Hill has for the definition of community is what the world needs to live by, and that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Cassandra, for calling in, and we're glad to hear that your son is safe. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Our studio guests today are Dr. Reza Mansour, who is president of the Islamic Association of Greater Hartford in Berlin, and Rabbi Deborah Kantor, who's rabbi at B'nai Tikva Shalom on the Bloomfield West Hartford line. I wanted to go back to you, Dr. Mansour, because we've been talking a lot about security and whether there needs to be more security for people of all faith traditions to feel safe. We cannot forget what happened in Meriden just a few years ago, when that mosque there was shot up because of someone who has since disavowed having these feelings, these hateful feelings towards Muslims. But moving forward, and what happens now with the mosques and other houses of worship is the feeling that you will need to have more of a police presence or more security at these places.
Well, we do work with the police and with law enforcement to try to do whatever we can to make sure that our communities are safe. But think about what the president said. Number one, it's so callous to blame the victim. It's really, it's callous to blame a community that has just lost 11 people and have had so many injured, to say they're at fault because they didn't have a security guard. And see, think about how impractical it is for every house of worship to have a security guard with presumably armed, when the police themselves are telling us that the best thing is not to have an armed person in the mosques. Because I've been to these training courses with the police, with law enforcement, with the FBI, and they say, no, don't have an armed person. That's not the best thing. So, you know, he doesn't even know what he's talking about. But number one, it's impractical. Number two, you go to these places of worship to be in peace and in serenity and to have armed guards and guards. I mean, it's like a fortress. Do you go to a fortress to pray? No, you go to a place where you feel welcomed, you can trust each other. That's the kind of environment that you need to be able to communicate with your Creator. You know, this is the most loving place that it should be, and to make it into a fortress is just unbelievable. Yes, we work with law enforcement, but this is not the solution. As Deborah said, and several people have said, you know, gun control needs to happen, and you can't just keep blaming the victim and, you know, happily living with your NPR, with your National Rifle Association, you know, donations. It needs to end.
Rabbi Kantor, we're going to have to go to break pretty soon, but just practically hearing from your members, do they want to see more security?
Well, I think I sent out an email to my members, quite a long email on Saturday night, and one of the things that I said right away is that we had been in touch with the police, and the police have been we're on the, as you mentioned, you keep mentioning, we're on the West Hartford Bloomfield line. And so we have two police forces, you know, which help us out. And they've always been helpful. They patrol extra times on high holidays and whenever there's any kind of question or threat. So we have a long and close relationship with them. And I said, look, we have to keep the doors locked at all times. We're going to have to, you know, be in the lobby, and we're going to have to be a little bit more careful. But no, we're not going to be a locked fortress. There's a reason we call it a sanctuary.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. We're going to go right to a short break. But first, Facebook's often the place people go after tragedies to share the reaction or to seek support among their community of friends. West Hartford resident Diane Cadrain shared a video on her Facebook wall over the weekend. The video was of her daughter-in-law, Alana Arian, singing her new melody to the ancient Jewish prayer for peace. Here's Alana singing with her wife, West Hartford native, and cantor Julia Cadrain at the Central Synagogue of Manhattan just last month. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Today, we're taking time to reflect on the tragedy in Pittsburgh when a shooter walked into a synagogue on Saturday morning and killed 11 people, leaving several others wounded. We heard from a caller whose son lives in Squirrel Hill and talked about that community. It's a community that I know well, having Pittsburgh roots. And Rabbi Cantor just reminded me that Squirrel Hill is Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. I wanted to go back to our in-studio guests again, Rabbi Deborah Cantor and also Dr. Reza Mansour. We've been hearing from some members of our community. Again, I'm curious to talk, if you could talk about the efforts within the interfaith communities, again, to engage community members, and how do you anticipate moving forward now from this, Reza?
Well, so we founded the Muslim Coalition of Connecticut about 15 years ago because we felt that although the mosques do interfaith at a different level, the Muslim Coalition was meant, organized to actually do interfaith together, live our faith together, work together in community relations. So we worked with many rabbis, including Deborah Cantor, but Rabbi Brockman, Rabbi Pincus, many rabbis in the greater Hartford area, where the Muslim Coalition started. And we worked on habitat builds together. We worked on serving in soup kitchens together. We walked against hunger together. It's a beautiful relationship that we developed, and we continue to work on it. With the 2016 whole event, the natural thing for us to do when we felt threatened was to work with our interfaith partners. And so we formed this interfaith task force so that we can address these crises as they come up. And we knew there would be, because as Deborah Cantor said, words lead to actions. Unfortunately, the words that come out of politicians You know, they have the bully pulpit, and they can make these words into whatever they want. And there's a vacuum in moral leadership from these words. And so the faith communities knew that we had to work with each other now. And so we've been doing lots of things together, on panels together, the Muslim Coalition of Connecticut working with the Connecticut Council for Interreligious Understanding and the Hartford Seminary have an Honest Conversations program, which have gone to many synagogues and churches where there's a Muslim panel that will answer any questions that you have, because the fear of Islam and Arabic words was getting out of control. And so we work in partnership with our faith communities to try to live our faith as much as we can.
I wanted to fit in a quick call. Fred's calling from Vernon. Fred, go ahead. We have 1 minute to go.
Hi. I was wondering if your guests would take the approach that I've seen some people in Pittsburgh say, which is to keep the president at arm's length until he disavows neo-Nazism or white nationalism. I get that the president is cynical and probably doesn't believe any of this, but traditionally at times like this, the president, whoever's in the office, has been the focus of healing. And is it a good idea, in their opinion, to keep them at arm's length here?
Fred, good question. I'm going to give that to Rabbi Cantor.
I haven't seen the president demonstrate much power of healing, whether he's throwing paper towels at victims of hurricanes or speaking to people after neo-Nazi marches in Charlottesville. So, though I would hope he would rise to an occasion and bring some comfort and uplift and inspiration, I haven't seen that demonstrated so far. One can only hope.
Rabbi Cantor, we brought this up earlier about how to talk about the words people use, they use, and it can begin at a young age, and there's conversations that need to happen within the schools. But how would you offer advice to parents, to educators about talking about this? Because so often everything is politically charged, and there may be hesitance sometimes to talk about this in the classroom, not wanting to be negative towards the president of the United States, but facts are facts.
You know what? I don't think with little kids that I would talk about the president. I don't think he's a terrific role model for children and other people. I think what I would talk about is what I talk about to children and adults. I talk about my deeply held values as a person of faith, which are the deeply held values that are shared by most people of faith and people of no faith. The values of peace, of justice, of treating people with kindness, of welcoming strangers. That's what I spoke about yesterday in the synagogue about our Abrahamic legacy of welcoming strangers, of refugees. When Abraham welcomes those dusty, disreputable looking travelers, and runs to greet them and wash their feet and feed them and have them sit in the shade. So I would talk to them about the things that we really believe. And I also would welcome them into appreciating the diversity of our world. When I teach our Hebrew school kids about the Jewish calendar, I always read them a book about the Jewish calendar, and then I read them about the Islamic calendar, and I look and I say, look, we both have a calendar that's about the moon.
Dr. Mansour, quickly.
I just want to add, when Deborah, either my wife and
Susan Izzard
did this beautiful project at Covenant Prep School, they taught religion from all three perspectives, but on how we can work together. And I think that's a beautiful model where we learn about each other with respect, about the diversity we have, but with respect and this feeling of trying to work together to form a community. I think that was a beautiful example.
And mutual appreciation.
Exactly, and we should be doing more of that.
We'll have to leave it there, but I really appreciate Dr. Reza Mansour, again, as president of the Islamic Association of Greater Hartford, for coming in, and Rabbi Deborah Cantor, Rabbi at B'nai Tikva Shalom, on the Bloomfield West Hartford line. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lucy.
Today's show produced by senior producer Lydia Brown. Special thanks to Betsy Kaplan and Kion Wolf. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Thanks for listening.